a storied franchise.
And the New York Islanders have won their fourth straight Stanley Cup.
All-time NHL greats.
And he caught that over the line. Goes to the left side, shoots and scores! He is all alone as the leading NHL goal-scoring defenseman.
Tonelli to Nystrom, he scores! Bob Nystrom scores the goal! The Islanders win the Stanley Cup!
This is Talkin' Isles with Greg Bicker and Corey Wright.
We welcome you into another edition of Talkin' Isles, the New York Islanders official interview-based podcast. I'm Greg Picker, Islanders radio color commentator, joined alongside by senior writer for NewYorkIslanders.com, Corey Wright. Corey, we bring on a fan favorite who joined the team on a famous day in the offseason of 2014.
That's right. We were joined by Johnny Boychuk, who played for the Islanders from 2014 to 2020. A fan favorite, like you said, known for his big shot. Of course, the nickname Johnny Rocket. Also threw a lot of big hits, blocked a lot of shots, just a general big fun personality to be around during his time with the team. So it was a lot of fun to have him on today talking about a lot of Islander memories, the 2015-2016 playoffs, joining the team alongside Nick Leddy in 2014, and a lot in between there. So a lot of fun to catch up with JB.
DeBailey, right wing over the Ranger line, give and go with Grabowski at the right dot. Neither could get the shot off. Boychuk fires and scores! Johnny Rocket hammers it home for the blue line, and it's a 3-1 lead for the Isles.
Now we welcome in Johnny Boychuk to the Talkin' Isles podcast. Johnny played 725 career NHL games, 404 of those with the New York Islanders, but we know you got your start in Edmonton, where you grew up, and there are always some stories about your brothers maybe locking you out of the house to work on your game. Can you give us the full background on that?
Yeah, sure. Whenever they got home from school earlier than me, they would lock me out, and while it would be cold outside and the net would be set up in the backyard with the plexiglass on the ground, and they would make me shoot pucks or 100 pucks until I was able to come in. Super nice of them.
Was that passed down from Sam to David and David to you, or did you ever get them back for that kind of stuff?
It wasn't passed down to like Dave and then to me. I think it was just being the youngest brother. They just tended to, I don't know if it would be pick on me, but try to make me better.
How did they not just make you a goalie, considering you were the youngest of three brothers? Or were you ever a goalie at one point and transitioned back out?
I was when I just first started out, I remember it being my birthday and my grandma was in town from Saskatoon and it was my birthday. So I'm like, well, I want to play goalie today. Cause like when you're that young, like everybody gets a chance to play goalie. And I think I let up like 17 goals that game. So that was the last time I played goalie, and I'd rather just block shots and then have that extra protection in the background.
Now we know that in your family, there was also some other WHL experience ahead of you in the Western Hockey League. At what age did you realize that you had a chance not just to play junior, but potentially even in the NHL as well?
I mean, going back, like Dave was drafted to Tri-City Americans and he went and played there as a 16-year-old. And like, we didn't really know much about like the Western League draft or the junior draft. And I think when I was 14, I got called into the principal's office. They told me that I was drafted to the Calgary Hitmen, and like I didn't really know. And I went to camp and, you know, played well, and I didn't really think about getting drafted in the NHL like when you're 16. And once like I turned 17, then I realized that, you know, like this, you can actually get drafted to the NHL, and well, I eventually did. And yeah, it was just a different, because there was no social media stuff back then. Everything was phone calls. So you didn't really know much about that. And like, even when I got drafted, it was like in the newspaper and like I seen where I got drafted. So it's a little bit different now.
Looking at some of your Calgary Hitmen teammates, obviously Ryan Getzlaf stands out as being a star on that team. So what was it like playing with Getzlaf back then?
It was good. Like when I was 17, he was 16, and we actually, I think, sat really close to each other in the locker room. And I actually got my agent to recruit him for our agency. And my agent's like, well, he's already got an agent. And I'm like, no, he doesn't. And you should talk to him. And good thing he did, because I mean, he went on to have a great career. And, you know, he's a extremely good player. And even on his last game, I was watching it, and you know, his last assist that he got was an absolute stunner. And you know, it was pretty cool to see that, you know, the ceremony after the game as well.
I would think playing in Calgary, as far as junior goes, like, you know, we ask everybody about those bus rides, and you got to think, if you're in Brandon or if you're in Seattle, Portland, Vancouver, like, you have those crazy ones. Calgary's got to be pretty central, and especially in a pre-social media. I mean, what are you doing on the bus for all those trips before, you know, is this like a Walkman situation? Is this like movies on the bus? Like a Discman, I should say.
Yeah, it was one of those Shockwave Sony Discmans where you have the CDs and like, it skips every like 10 seconds if the bus like hits a bump, and it's supposed to be the shockproof, but it's not really the shockproof. It's like, I don't know. It was, you just listen to music, sometimes played some cards, but like Calgary was pretty central. You had Red Deer, Lethbridge, Medicine Hat really close. And then in Moose Jaw, you had Regina, which was 45 minutes. Swift Current was really close. Brandon was through, I think, 3.5 hours or something like that. That was pretty good too in Moose Jaw, because there was a lot of teams as well. Like Saskatoon was 2 hours. Prince Albert was, I think, 2.5, 3. So it was pretty, like, I was fortunate enough to play in places where the travel wasn't too bad, considering like if you're in Brandon, like your closest game is 3 hours or something like that, and you have to travel during the day before games on the bus. I don't know how they did it, but I know that we made it work where I was playing.
Now, even before that, growing up in Edmonton, you're born in 84, so maybe a little too young to truly remember any of the Oilers Cups, maybe 1990 a little bit, but were you a big Oilers fan growing up in the 90s?
I mean, yeah, because they won so many cups when I was like first born. And then I remember when they won that, the last one, and like where I grew up was right down the street from the Coliseum. And when they won that one Stanley Cup, my dad like got us up, and we went up and down I don't know if it's not really Main Street, but like where we are, it's kind of a main street. You probably wouldn't go there at nighttime, but we drove up and down the street, and everybody was, you know, just honking their horns and just celebrating.
And so fast forwarding a little bit, you get drafted by the Colorado Avalanche in the 2002 draft. They tried you out as a forward for a little bit there. So kind of what was the story behind that? You talked about, you know, having your try and net as a kid. And then what happened when they made you a forward in Colorado there?
I think they just wanted to see how I would do. I think they wanted me to be like a Phil Housley kind of guy where you go back and forth and play the positions. But as a forward, I would just dump and chase and try to crush as many people as I could. And there's a lot of fighting too. So that was interesting. And then I actually got called up my first game as a forward, which was weird, because like I was like the fourth line, and I think Ryan Smith got hurt and they called me up, and it was interesting. I mean, getting your first call up as a forward and you are actually a defenseman. And so I did that. And then the same call up, a defenseman got hurt. So I got to play defense on my next two games.
Now, even before then, you spent a nice bit of time at the American Hockey League level in 5 different seasons in the AHL. One was after that, once you were moved into the Bruins organization, but yeah, 5 different cities that you played in the AHL. And I mean, can you just share some of those experiences at the American Hockey League level? And I even really wanted to ask about your 1 year in Albany, because that was your third year. And I saw you at 125 penalty minutes that year. Your career high in the NHL was 53 penalty minutes. So did you try to change your game a little bit there in an attempt to make it to the next level?
No, that was more or less becoming a forward and fighting more, because I would be hitting people and then you would have to fight. So then that's where all the penalty minutes came from. So that was the year they tried me out as a forward. And I mean, it was all right. And then the next year I was kind of like a forward for the first two periods. And then when the game was close, like say we're up by a goal or two, or we were down by one goal, then they would put me as a defenseman to try to like either keep the score close or try to win or, you know, keep our lead. So it was kind of different that year in Cleveland because, you know, you're playing forward for two periods and then all of a sudden you're, hey, go back and play defense. And it's like, all right.
And then when you do get dealt to the Bruins in 2008, you still had that one more year in Providence, the AHL level, but what a year that was. 65 points in 78 games, and you won the Eddie Shore Award as the best defenseman in the AHL. So was that just, first off, a weight off your shoulders moving to a different organization that saw you truly as a defenseman, and then the success on the ice translates?
Well, that was the first thing I asked when, I got traded because, I didn't really want to play forward anymore because I knew I was a defenseman. And when they traded me to Boston, the first thing that I asked, I think it was Don Sweeney actually phoned me and told me that they traded for me. And I asked him, did you trade me as a forward or as a defenseman? He goes, no, as a defenseman. I go, okay, good. Cause if it was a forward, I probably would be in Russia right now or something like that. But it was a good situation for me cause I got to play defense and they put me in every situation, either penalty kill or power play. And we had a really good team that year and, you know, a lot of good players, good goalie, obviously. And, you know, I flourished from being around good players.
I want to talk about some of those defensemen you would have played with in Boston, because there's obviously a lot of Islander connections here when you think about Dennis Seidenberg, Zdeno Chara. I mean, both guys, I don't know if people really realize this about Sides, but he is a fitness freak. So, you know, what'd you learn from those guys? And also, who do you think is in better shape, Big Z or Sides? Because it's probably pretty close.
I don't know. That's maybe one day we'll have like a fitness competition between those two. And that would be interesting because they both work out extremely hard. And, you know, that's why they've played in the NHL for so long is, you know, their hard work and, you know, they're good people as well. Like I still talk to them both. And I mean, they're in shape. Like it's kind of ridiculous how fit these guys are, especially like, you know, they're not like 25 years old. I mean, Z's in his 40s, Sides is close to 40, but they just worked out and wanted to improve themselves every day. And it was, you know, interesting to see because then you learn from them as well. Like as a younger guy, you come in and you see Zdeno working out before anybody gets to the rink, or even Sides when he got traded to Boston, he's in the gym as well before everybody gets to the rink. And then you want to be in the gym to get better as well. So, you know, you learn from those guys by just being around them.
So we, of course, know about the success you have in Boston, winning the Cup in 2011. A couple of years later, it's October 2014. Training camp is pretty much done. I know you even played in that preseason game in Bridgeport, I think just a few days prior, between the Bruins and the Islanders.
No, I didn't.
And that, you didn't play in that game.
I don't know if I did, because I was actually talking to one of the scouts. Or no, it was the one in Boston. The one in Boston, I think. Or it might have been.
I just remember there was a Bruins Islanders preseason game in Bridgeport.
There was two of them. There's okay. There's one in Boston I played in because I remember Josh Bailey was getting a not so nice pass up the wall and his head was like turned back and I was screaming at him, heads up. And he as an opponent in preseason. And he let the puck go. And I talked to him after like the whistle. I'm like, what was that guy doing giving you that pass? He goes, well, thank God you were screaming at me because I would have been into another level. And we still, like when I first got traded to the Islanders, we talked about it for the next couple of days when I got traded. He's like, did you know you're getting traded here? I go, absolutely not. But yeah, it was kind of cool to, you know, have that encounter with Josh right off the bat. And he's still like one of my best friends as well. I talk to him like once, probably once a week, once every 2 weeks. So we still keep in contact and, you know, he's such a good person.
So it's October 4th, a wild day, because not only you get dealt, but Nick Leddy as well. And I read that you, on your drive down to Long Island for the first time, did you call Nick and kind of just get to know him in that sort of way? Do you have any memories from that call?
Yeah, I was just, I mean, I got his phone number from Kimber, and I just wanted to call him and see what he thought, because like we're both in the same situation. Like I think he probably knew a couple people on the team, but like I didn't know anybody on the team, and I was like wondering how he felt about, you know, getting traded, because it's both of us. No, because he got traded from Minnesota, but I'd never been traded in like when I was in the NHL, and you know, we're in similar situations where we're going to a new place, we don't know the place, and just to see how like he felt as well. And you know, we were both excited to come, and we got eventually, well, we were partners for, I mean, forever. And I still talk to Nick to this day. So, you know, you realize after going through certain situations where, you know, you make friends right off the hop and you're friends for life, basically.
You know, when you got traded there, the Islanders were coming off a year that they hadn't made the playoffs. And, you know, I think prior to that lockout shortened season, they hadn't made the playoffs really consistently in a little while. So, you know, what were you expecting when you came to the island, and really what surprised you about it? Cause you know, obviously that trade and that season, and then kind of since then has been a period of, you know, relative success for the Islanders. So just how is it different from what you thought it was going to be when you got traded there in 2014?
Well, I didn't really know what to expect. Cause like when you're a opposing player, all you do is go to the Marriott across the street from the Coliseum, and all you see is the Marriott and the Coliseum. So like as an opponent coming in, that's all you see, because you usually have team dinner like at the hotel, and then you walk over and play the game. So like I didn't really know what to expect, and I knew the team was like a younger team. They needed defense, obviously, because they got me and Nick. And I mean, I didn't expect them to be as hardworking as they were, because like the first practice that we had on the island, I was like just watching these guys skate around, and I'm like, oh my God, like these guys are fast. And like I didn't realize like how fast they were and how hardworking of a group they were. And that first practice, I just realized that, you know, we have something special here that, you know, hopefully we can turn and win a cup, because there was a lot of good pieces there. Just needed a couple more. And, you know, we did have a really good team, and we always worked extremely hard against any opponent that we had.
So before we get into that 2014-15 season, which I think for Greg and I is probably one of our favorite seasons that we've been here for, just really fun year. I remember, and I think we mentioned this, I want to say Franz Nielsen, but you came to the team so close to the start of the season that I think it may have been a few weeks into the year, team plane lands back in Farmingdale. The text goes out the next day. It says practice tomorrow at Iceworks. And I distinctly remember just hearing your voice from the back of the plane going, "What's Iceworks?" So, because obviously you'd been practicing at the Coliseum up until that point. So can you just kind of describe Iceworks to the uninitiated?
What a treat. What a treat that was. So like we've been practicing at the Coliseum, and then you get that text, like you said, it's at Iceworks. I'm like, what is Iceworks? Like, and then everybody's like, oh, you just wait. I'm like, oh, okay. This can't be good. So you walk in and like you look at the ice, and it's like, what's going on with the ice? Because like I think if you lied down on one side, you couldn't see the other side of the ice, because there's a big bubble. Well, eventually they redid it after we left, but it was extremely cold. Where we did our warm-up was like in a fenced-in yard, where like if you touch the top of the fence, like you would cut yourself. Yeah, it was just a character place, I would say, in a nice way, but it was interesting and yeah, it was different. I'm glad that we got Northwell now.
And a beautiful place that Northwell is, but yeah. To go to the start of the regular season, that 2014-15 campaign, it was a home and home with Carolina. Game one was in Raleigh, and you had a goal and two assists in a 5-3 win.
Boychuk straight on, he scores! Johnny Boychuk scores the first goal of the season for the New York Islanders. It's a 5-on-3 power play goal, and they have a 1-0 lead.
What kind of a moment was it when you scored that goal, first game as an Islander, and the start that that team had that year, rattling off win after win to begin the campaign?
Yeah, I mean, to come in and make a difference right away, like, you couldn't have asked for a better script for myself. Just make an impact right away. And we just kept playing good and winning. And, you know, you just get that feeling like there's something special about this group. And I mean, it was just a fun time to like be a part of a new team and, you know, everybody being around you and you're being around success. And it was just a good situation.
And that was the original last year at the Coliseum. And you mentioned what you knew of it as a visiting player, but how long did it take for you as an Islander to truly see what that place meant to not only the fans, but the alumni and also the guys that had already been playing at the Coliseum for quite a few years?
Yeah, I mean, well, we had to get the fans back because, I mean, they weren't back the first little bit, but like after maybe the first month when we started to do good, all our fans started to come back and, you know, there was a lot of buzz around the Coliseum and playing there. You hear the fans and, I mean, they're loud. Like it's that arena is the loudest arena that you could possibly play in. When you're playing well, you're playing good. Even if you're losing, they're still around you and cheering you on. You know, like when you're down a goal, they're chanting, "Let's go Islanders." And it gives you extra emotion, extra juice, I guess you'd call it, to try to win the game or keep pushing. Even when you make a big hit, they're cheering loud and like you can hear it. Like I remember in playoffs that year, I thought the floor was going to fall down before the game because you could hear them chanting and banging and just screaming, tailgating before the games. Probably really nice for the opposing teams that are staying at the Marriott. And I still remember the first game that we played at the Marriott because I was staying there. I just got traded, didn't have a house yet. And my room was facing the Coliseum and like I wake up at like 9 o'clock and I'm like, what are all these people like doing in the parking lot? And they're tailgating, you know, early in the morning. I'm like, geez, I better get some earplugs for the pregame nap this afternoon. So, you know, it was an awesome experience to play in the Coliseum and see like the passion that the fans have around the team. It was unbelievable.
So your first two seasons here, back-to-back 100-point seasons in the regular season. That first year, you know, Game 7 loss against Washington, we talked a lot with Franz Nielsen about that, just kind of felt that maybe the team wasn't quite ready to take the next step at that point. But, you know, the following year, you guys break through against the Florida Panthers. And you know, I'm just curious, you know, what do you remember about that series? Because if you look back at some of the games, there's a lot of overtime, you know, you think about some of the performances that a guy like Thomas Greiss put in, especially in games 5 and 6. So, you know, what do you remember about that series and then, you know, game 6 advancing specifically?
I remember that Washington series. Like it was such a good series. I mean, there's hitting, there was goals, there was good defense. And then the fans as well, just bananas. Like it was crazy. And, you know, we did lose, but it was unfortunate because we actually thought that we had a chance to, you know, go all the way because we had such a tight group. And I mean, that was heartbreaking to lose to Washington because, I mean, we knew we had a special group and, you know, it was unfortunate that we did lose. And then we lost to Tampa the next year after we beat Florida. And I mean, it was just heartbreaking because like we had such a tight group and, you know, after that Tampa Bay series, you knew that there was going to be changes because, I mean, not every year you're going to have the same group, exact same group every year. But I mean, it was unfortunate because I thought that we probably should have went further than we actually did.
But from that Florida series specifically, I mean, you know, what do you remember about that night of when you guys advanced? Because, you know, even though it wasn't at the Coliseum, it's at Barclays. I mean, that place was going nuts. I think, you know, the game obviously ended pretty late too, but the energy was just crazy that night. So what do you remember about that night, that game specifically?
I remember just the fans going crazy. Like you said, it was the first time they advanced in a long time. And
yes, yes, yes! The Islanders have their first playoff series win in 23 years!
I mean, they were just, it was just so loud. Like even at Barclays Center, like for the fans to be that loud, it was just an experience that you can't really duplicate, I guess you'd call it, like, because, you know, the fans were just ready for an like a series win, and we finally did it, and you know, it was just awesome.
Wanted to ask about one of those mementos that was handed out after wins in the locker room for I think it was a couple of years there, that starter jacket. I think it had a fisherman logo on it. And you were the person that brought it into the room. Do you remember the story behind that?
Well, like we did something similar in Boston, and we didn't really have anything when we were after a win for the Islanders. And I'm like, well, maybe I should like get this sweet starter jacket off eBay. So I did. And, you know, I brought it to, you know, the attention of like the coaches, and I'm like, do you think this would be a good idea? And they're like, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, after every game, like there's still pictures I have in my phone of guys wearing that jacket. And, you know, it's kind of cool to see, even though like some of the guys were a little bit too big for the jacket. So it was awesome to, you know, just bring that in and, you know, try to do something for after a win instead of just playing music and, you know, letting guys feel appreciated, even though, you know, some guys that did get the jacket, you know, it was more or less to make them feel like not part of the group, but even though they didn't score a goal or get an assist or, you know, get the points, if they did like had a couple good hits or blocked shots and just played really good, then you would give them the jacket, you know, just to make them feel like, you know, you had a good game, even though you didn't get a goal or assist, you still played excellent and you should know that.
Do you still have any of the hats that you designed? I know that you're talking about mementos here. So.
I still do. Yeah. Actually, I still have actually both of them, and they're up in the closet, and I still wear them. So yeah, I still have them. They're actually, I think they're pretty sweet. They should just bring them back and start selling a couple more.
Well, we also understand that Turks and Caicos is a place that is special to you. And a few years ago, I think you may have modeled in a Turks and Caicos magazine. Yep. Do you want to share the story behind that?
Well, my aunt and uncle live there. They've lived there for now 18 years. And we would always go visit them. We're actually going, I want to say, in 10 days or so to visit them again. And they always have, like, they have a magazine. And whenever somebody comes to visit that is, like, somewhat of a celebrity or a celebrity, that they do kind of like a photo shoot and a article about them and why they come to the island and, you know, yada, yada, yada. And, you know, we did a photo shoot at a hotel and on the beach. And yeah, I still have a bunch of those in the drawer right in front of me.
Well, earlier you said that you enjoyed blocking shots more than playing goalie, but I've also seen you on MSG saying you explicitly did not enjoy blocking shots. But, you know, it's one of those things, like, you know, when you look at your game, just what do you think about it, you know, really connected with the fans the way it did? I mean, you think it's the big shot? Is it the big hits? Is it more of like the kind of laying out? You know, Barry Trotz used to say that you played a very old school kind of game. I think Cappy did too. So, you know, what do you think it was about your game that really connected with fans and Islander fans especially?
I think it's just working extremely hard and doing whatever it takes to get the win. I mean, if you have to block a shot or make a big hit, I think it's just putting yourself in the position, well, try not to put yourself in too many positions, but to just do whatever it takes to win and work hard and wear your heart on your sleeve, kind of like the people of Long Island do. And, you know, I think that's how I connected to so many people, or, you know, not really connected, but they could relate to me, where, you know, I'm going to work extremely hard and do whatever it takes to win. And if that means I'm going to have to make a hit or block a shot, even though it hurts, it doesn't matter. As long as I'm doing something to help the team win, that's all that matters.
You know, kind of going off that, I obviously you played a lot of games. There's a lot of plays. So, you know, we don't expect every guy to remember every single shift or play or that kind of thing. But, you know, it was that game against St. Louis, I want to say in the 1920 season. I think you played like a 2.5 minute shift. Part of it was without a stick, blocking a few shots. And then, you know, I think when you kicked the puck down the ice to clear it, the fans gave you a pretty like large ovation. And, you know, I'm sure to some degree there's blinders when you're playing a game, but, you know, when you, hearing something like that, does that stick out to you and you remember parts of your career or a game or a shift like that?
I still remember that shift, because the next year there was a video clip of that, and I think Barry actually showed me it. And you know, I still remember it because it was like you break your stick, you're playing with, and it's already been a minute and your stick breaks and you're still in there in your zone for another minute without a stick. And then somebody gives you one, or no, somebody didn't actually, which was unfortunate. And then the puck comes to you and you try to do whatever it takes to get it out so you can get off the ice, because you've been out there for 2.5 minutes and you're just absolutely gassed. And then the fans just give a big uproar. And, you know, that's going back to what we just talked about. You do whatever it takes to either win or survive a shift and not get scored on when you have no stick for 2.5 minutes. It was, I remember that, and it was, I don't want to have one of those shifts again, and I'm not going to.
We got the chance to hear about your relationship with a former teammate, Nick Leddy, and a couple of other teammates that we wanted to ask about. And first, Anders Lee.
Dishes it off for Anders Lee in the left corner. The captain of Jordan Eberle in the right corner. Right point for the Boychuk blast. He scores!
He was a rookie in 2014-15, which was your first year on the island. How early did you see that he could be captain material down the line?
I would say it wouldn't be the first year, because he was on and off playing. But the next year, you could really tell, like, he works extremely hard. He works out extremely hard as well. He is vocal. And, you know, for him to get the C, I mean, there couldn't have been a better guy to get it. And he's very humble. And, you know, I still talk to him as well to this day, and will continue to do so unless he doesn't phone me back. So, you know, he's a good person. He cares about everybody on that team, and that's what you want in a captain, is somebody that either leads by example, which he does on and off the ice, and he cares for each and every individual on that team, and he would do anything for you either on or off the ice.
How about Noah Dobson? You know, he lived with Dennis Seidenberg when he first broke into the league. He's had a lot of really good veteran partners like yourself, or Andy Green or Zdeno Chara. But if I remember correctly, that you drove him to and from the rink during his rookie year. So just what's your relationship like with him, and how rewarding has it been to see kind of where he's gotten to now?
It's actually really nice to see him like flourish from like where he was at the beginning to now. His last season was extremely good. You know, I think it benefited him by just playing every once in a while and developing his game into what it is now. I'm sure that he would probably would want to have been playing the whole time, but I think he appreciates all the opportunities that he's getting now more than if he just got handed everything right at the beginning. And, you know, he's an extremely good person. I sent him a text after he signed a couple of days ago, and he instantly got back to me. And, you know, he's a good person, and you like seeing people like that have success.
Also wanted to ask about some of your off-ice hobbies, and I believe guitar playing might fit in that category. Can you just share for us how you may have gotten into it and your skill level, perhaps?
Yeah. I started when I was 8, I had to take lessons when I was young, because my dad was a musician growing up, and he was in a band, and I had to start playing guitar because he said if you ever needed money growing up and you didn't have, like, you were unfortunate to not have a job or a source of income, that you could play guitar on the streets and make money. So I know it sounds crazy, but that was the way that it was. And I played guitar from, I don't know, 8 years old. I took lessons until I was 14 or 15. And then I just played hockey after that. And I know I lost a little bit of it for a little while, but I picked it back up. And, you know, it's enjoyable to, you know, show my kids that I can actually play a musical instrument. And now they're starting to play instruments as well. So it's nice to see that, you know, they still want to do it as well.
Did you bring the guitar to the bubble?
Yeah. You're sitting in a hotel and you can't go to anybody else's room. And I mean, I used to be an Xbox guy, but instead of playing Xbox, I just bought a guitar, and I already had one, but I wanted a nicer one. So I went to the store. I think it's the Guitar Center in Carlisle Place. And I bought a guitar off them and brought it to the bubble. And I have it actually right in the room, right in front of me as well. And I still play it to this day. So, I mean, sitting in your room during the bubble, you can't really do too much if you don't have an Xbox, or you don't really want to play an Xbox. And, you know, you're sitting there and you have a lot of time on your hands, and, you know, it's just nice to pick up an instrument and learn new songs or get better at old songs as well.
Any of your former Islanders teammates have hidden musical talents that fans might not know about?
Well, Anders is good. Barzi is decent. Cal is really good. And Pelly is really, really good. So I bet you didn't know that about Pelly. He's actually a really good guitar player.
You know, obviously, when we're talking about the bubble towards the end of your career, and a pretty scary moment against the Montreal Canadiens at Barclays Center, you know, with the Artturi Lehkonen skate coming up to your eye, can you just take us through, you know, now, obviously, yeah, things are okay, but, you know, what was that moment like? Because, you know, I saw a picture of where the cut was, and it's scary. It really was a scary moment there.
Yeah, I mean, when it first happened, like, I knew it wasn't good because, like, there's blood everywhere. And I got into the room and, like, I took off I think there was a gauze pad, and then everything on my left side was like total fuzz. It was extremely scary because I had no idea what was going to be happening. And yeah, and I went to the hospital and had to go and have surgery that night. And it was scary. Like, I don't even know how to explain it. It was just petrifying, actually.
Well, thankfully, it turned out okay in terms of your health, of your eye. Go to the bubble. You end up only playing a few games in the bubble. May have been related to the eye due to that hit against the Panthers. But even though you weren't on the ice for the majority of games during that run, how special was that to be with your team, even if you were away from the family longer than you would have wanted to be, but for a great reason and a long playoff run?
Yeah, it was, I mean, I would have loved to be in that lineup, but like every night after I got hit, but, you know, I had to recover from the concussion. And even though I did get to play a couple games after, I still had some side effects from that hit for a couple months, I want to say. And I didn't really realize it because you're in the bubble and you're just zoned in and you just want to get on the ice and play. But I mean, just to watch them, our team, you know, advance and advance and advance. And I mean, we did lose to Tampa, but like, I got to play the final two games that year. And it was another special group, just like the first 2 years that we had, but we got further and further and, you know, made the team realize that we do have a good team. And we still have a good team to this day that, you know, we can win. We just have to, you know, get past that conference final. It's a tough thing to do, especially against teams that are extremely good. But, you know, going back to that season, it was a special moment, even though it was a different atmosphere. I'm sure if we were playing at the Coliseum during the bubble period, that we probably would have won that series just because of our fans being so loud and proud, and they would have actually probably helped us beat Tampa because our fans are that emotionally attached to our team that we would have probably, I want to say we probably would have won that series if we were in a different situation, but we weren't. And, you know, it was a good learning experience for our team as a group.
We definitely got to see what the Coliseum and what that fan support meant the year after. Obviously, I don't think anyone who was at that game six is going to forget that kind of feeling in that building that day. A couple fun ones here, a couple different ones for you. We talked about you bringing in the post-game win jacket. I believe, were you responsible for the post-game locker room win song for a couple of years there?
I'm thinking that it was me and Cal Clutterbuck that would have a win song. And I think if your team went on a winning streak, then you would play that song. Like, you would get to pick that song for a period of time. And, you know, if you lost, then you handed over the win song. But I think they might have, we might have just had a win song after every game. And I think it was like just a song that everybody enjoyed or got to goof around with.
You know, before we let you go, we're talking about some of your other teammates that you've had a lot of time with. You know, you said Josh Bailey, you obviously had that moment with him up in Bridgeport before Boston before joining the team. You said he's still one of your best friends. I mean, he's on the cusp of 1,000 games all with one team. So just, you know, what do you think about that when you think of Josh Bailey? Not a lot of guys get to 1,000, let alone with just one team. So, yeah. You know, what do you think when you see him reaching that kind of number?
Oh, that's going to be awesome for him to do so. I mean, he's such like a humble, down-to-earth person. I mean, he means so much to the Islanders. He's been with them since he got drafted. And, you know, to see him hit 1,000 games is going to be phenomenal just because it's 1,000 games, yes, but it's the person that's going to be hitting the 1,000 games that at least I know. You know, we always would be on the road and we would go to dinners together. We would hang out after dinners in the room and just either watch a movie or TV or hockey. It didn't matter what it was. We would always be hanging out together. And, you know, he is such a good player and he's been fortunate enough to not have too many injuries. And for him to hit 1,000 games is going to be, it's going to be exciting for me to be able to watch him hit that 1,000 games. And, you know, maybe I'll be able to come down and see that game and be able to partake in watching him hit that 1,000 game mark because he deserves it. He works hard. He's a good player. He's a good person. And I like seeing people like that get the accolade of hitting 1,000 games, especially with one team. I mean, he's been with the Islanders for his whole career, and to do it for one organization, I mean, that's pretty special, and he is a special person.
Well, Johnny, we thank you so much for catching up with us and all the memories that you had, and we know the Islander fans really appreciate you for everything that you've done for Long Island.
No, and I appreciate them.
Well, thank you again for joining us on another edition of Talkin' Isles. Please make sure to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you might listen. You can follow us on Twitter. I am at Greg Picker here.
And I am at Rightsway.
You can follow all of the latest info about the team on Twitter at NY Islanders and stay up to date on UBS Arena at ubsarena.com. A big thank you to our producer, Rachel Lusher, and to WRAQ at Hofstra University. And we'll see you next time on Talkin' Isles.